Good morning, everybody. Okay, my name is Jonathan Sievers. I'm going to talk about high power and some measurements we've done in the CMB at high L. So there is, as always, this is a partial list. These people helped a lot with the simulations I'll be talking about. This is the Caltech and NRAO core. There are several other people, so everybody that was mentioned in Tony's talk yesterday also helps. Here's our instrument. So it's a 13-element interferometer, wide bandwidth, low noise, located in a very isolated high region of Chile, where the ALM site's going to be. This is Brian Mason, one of our postdocs for SCALE. This is installing the CBI. We were indebted greatly to local help and various indigenous life forms and fun with Photoshop. So we took a few different sets of observations. Tony talked a lot about the mosaics yesterday. Here's the sensitivity maps of our mosaics. They're about 2 degrees on a side. This is our UV coverage. So you can see it's pretty full. Okay, so from our observations, we measure a power spectrum, as those in the scanner want to do, described in Myers et al. This is the standard game where you make your covariance matrix, and it's the sum of your noise and your estimated CMB signal and any sources you know about, and any residual sources or whatever else. You sort of add all these ingredients into your sausage making and see what comes out at the end. So here's the mosaic power spectrum. This is a picture of a mosaic. I'm not going to talk about this too much. Tony covered that yesterday. What I'm going to talk more about is our deep fields. So in addition to these wide area mosaics, we measured three fields much more deeply, about 50 nights. One was only a couple of weeks, but the other two were about 50 nights each. Here's the boomerang map, and this gives you a scale of how big our deep fields are. So they're much, much smaller, go to much higher resolution than most of the things out there. They're not located in boomerang. This is only for... They're also not all located in the same spot in the sky. We are further north, which is actually a good thing, because then we can measure extra things in the field with northern telescopes. Okay, so here is the deep power spectrum. And the thing which jumps out is this feature right here. And this is the band power we measure at high L. So these are angular scales of about a few arc minutes. And what you see is that it's much higher than you'd expect, given this is our best fit cosmology, but any cosmology you put in is dying off here. There's silk damping going on, so there's an exponential damping tail. There's just nothing out, very little out there. So as Tony said yesterday, it's about 3.5 sigma above zero, about 3 sigma above best fit cosmology. And again, this is very insensitive to which cosmology you put in there. So what's going on? Could it be instrumental? That's the first thing. I hope to convince you that this is a real effect and something worth thinking about. In our observing strategy, we have ground spillover. So to get rid of this, we observe a field, and then we go back. We observe a field for 8 minutes. We go back after that and observe a field 8 minutes an hour behind it. So we're observing through the same hour angle in the sky. This gets rid of ground signal. We've tested this pretty carefully. We don't see anything that's left over from the ground. But it also removes any instrumental DC effects or anything instrumental on time scales longer than 8 minutes. There's nothing there. So once we do noise statistics correctly, it's actually kind of tricky. We have scatter-based noise estimates, but if you combine several scatter-based noise estimates together, there's a bias, and you need to treat those statistics correctly, which is non-trivial, but we do pretty well. We get chi-squared for our data of 0.99. And so if anything, we are under-subtracting noise, which means the excess, or over-subtracting noise, which means the excess is even larger. Also for our jackknife power spectra, where you subtract half the data from another half, we get good consistency with zero. So. Yeah, really, we've looked a lot, and there's just no evidence that there's anything funny instrumental going on. So it's really not instrumental. So could it be some sort of foreground? Well, probably. If it's not from the instrument, it must be on the sky. Could it be galactic foregrounds? The big ones we expect are synchrotron and free-free. most concerned. The CBI has some spectral coverage. We've got about a bandwidth of 10 gigahertz at 30 gigahertz, so there's a 30% width in spectral coverage there. So we can, at our low L, we have deep enough observations that we can measure the spectral index, and we get 1.84 plus or minus 0.34. And you expect 2 for the CMB, you expect minus a little bit for free-free and minus 0.7 or so for synchrotron. Now, unfortunately, the sensitivity is higher at low L than at high L, so we can't really play this game out at high L where this excess is. But we don't see any evidence for contaminating foregrounds at L's of 600. Nobody else in the 30 gigahertz game has seen foregrounds at fields that have been selected for low foregrounds. So expected levels are tailor the VSA folks, the most recent ones, to talk about it. But nobody sees anything. We also looked at the worst field we could find. We had a night when we couldn't observe our main field, so we called down from the mountain and asked them to find the nastiest, ugliest, most disgusting field they could in all the IRS and synchrotron maps. And we observed that, and there was moon in the field, so there was extra signal from the moon. Really just about the worst observation one could possibly make. And what we found there is that 30 gigahertz, we were only a factor of 3 higher from the blank field microwave background signal. So it's very hard if you pick a good field, which we did. The signals, expected signals here are about 1,000 or 10,000, something like that, times higher than the backgrounds in our main fields. So there's just it's really hard to come up with this. The power spectrum of the foregrounds in most models is crashing. Uh-oh. Man, I changed that too. No signal.
Was it your power going out?
No, I just charged the battery and I told it not to. Damn, I borrowed this laptop. Let's never do that again.
Do you have a power
cord? Yeah, I do. Well, I can keep talking if you want. That's right there. Okay. All right. So, okay, I'll talk about any more on foregrounds.
Point sources.
Okay. All right. Point sources. I will talk about point sources. That was the next slide. Yeah, Max. Okay, point sources. So we have a big program for monitoring point sources with the OVRO 40 meter. We built a receiver for that as well. So what we do for point sources is measure the bright point sources in the fields from NVSS. So all our point source lists come from NVSS, which goes down to about 3 millijanskis at 1.4 gigahertz. With small spectral indices, minus a half, minus one, which most of these things tend to be in that range, the fluxes then are very small when you go up to 30 gigahertz. So we measure them, but we really actually use the measurements to get an idea of what the source statistics are. We project out point sources in our data using just the positions. This is, I think, Bond et al. Was the paper that people reference on this. It's a standard game for interferometers again, and it does a very good job of getting rid of point sources. You can perturb the properties you put in, and you just don't, if you project it out, you don't see anything left in the power spectrum. Now, there are sources, of course, fainter, and so we estimate from our source counts that we get with the Owens Valley 40 meter what the spectrum noise distribution is. And make an estimate of the faint point source counts and subtract that off. And that's actually a fairly small correction. It's only about a quarter, you know, somewhere between a quarter and a fifth of the extra power we see. So then the big question is, what if there's some population that doesn't show up in NBSS that has rising spectral indices and can affect the power at 30 gigahertz at small L? So we've done a few things, you know, we've done a few things to look at this. One is Tony's gone through our mosaic maps and looked for any point sources that are left there that don't show up in NBSS. And we can get down to somewhere between 15 and 20 millijanskis in our mosaic maps that cover, you know, 8 or 10 square degrees. And we don't see a single point source that doesn't show up in NBSS, not one. Also, Dawson et al. Have done a similar sort of thing at even higher L with the BIMA array. So they are very much more sensitive to point sources. And they don't see a population of a lot of faint sources that have rising spectral indices that could influence what we see at 30 gigahertz. Also, the deep maps go down to about 1 millijansky per beam. And we need about 100 millijansky squared to explain the extra power. And we just don't see anything. So it's really very difficult to find a place to hide enough point sources, because it can't be bright, they're not in the middle, and they're not faint. So there's... Whoa. Next time I'm buying a laptop. So point sources. It's, you know, our first thought was we had done a bad job doing point sources, but... So, thanks very much. So, it's very difficult to find enough point sources that you could have some sort of self-consistent way of having this come from point sources. So, sorry about all the zoom. Oh, here's another kind of fun thing. We took the low L data from our 1 meter baselines and split it into our high channels and low channels. And here are the maps. And you can see, you know, for instance, here's a point source that wasn't completely subtracted out by over. But again, we would project something like this out so it doesn't affect the power spectrum. But you can see that the features are matched up actually quite well. And now they shouldn't match up exactly, because the L coverage, when you have lower frequencies and higher frequencies in the same baseline, is a little bit different. So the L coverage is about 20% different. But you can see there's nothing that is coming in and coming out on the large scale features like this one point source that's in there. So again, there's just no evidence for funny things. So the foreground that we'll talk most about is SC. Now, we know SC is a real foreground. These are some maps of pointed cluster observations from Patricia Dumpersert's thesis. So you can see a cluster very clearly in just a couple hours. But there are more faint clusters out there. So what we've done is taken some simulations, n-body simulations done by Wadsley et al. And Penn et al. are the two sets with two different values of sigma 8. As Lode pointed out, the signal is very sensitive to the assumed value of sigma. It's about sigma 8 to the seventh. So here is two sets done with sigma 8 equals 0.9. This is the Penn et al. 0.9, and this is Wadsley et al. As you can see, it's a little low. Now there are some effects from the size of the box. And here's sigma 8 equals 1. And you can see the sigma 8 equals 1 simulations actually do a pretty good job of showing that, if sigma 8 were 1, we would be very comfortable saying that our high L power is consistent with what you'd expect from what the current set of simulations are. But as, you know, as you can see, these things don't quite agree, especially here at the low L tail on the sigma 8 equals 1 simulations. So I think they're pretty good, but they're not written in stone what you expect from different cosmologies yet. But again, to point out, if sigma 8 equals 1, then very reasonable to think that our power is the same level you'd expect. But 0.9 seems to be a little low with at least things as they look now. Now here is the Dawson et al. Results at higher L. Again, if there are point sources, you have to be a little careful because the way they deal with point sources is different from us. Their fields are much smaller, so what they can actually do is go in to the NVSS maps and find spots where there are no, you know, one and two sigma peaks. Well, Dawson said that they're pointed VLA, but they also went to the NVSS ones and picked fields that were not even around one or two sigma fluctuations, let alone sources. But yes, they also have pointed VLA observations at I think 4 gigahertz. But if there, you know, if there's some unknown population that didn't show up at lower frequency, again, the power spectrum of point sources goes like L squared, so they'd be sky high if, but it's. Yeah, they're not directly comparable. I don't claim that they are, but he doesn't see anything. And, you know, we told him what the power level we'd need to get from point sources would be, and he's like, no way. So here's a map of the simulation. This is what it looks like when we run it through our fake observing stuff. So you can see that some things show up. This cluster shows up in the dark cluster up here, but it is actually fairly tricky to make good maps, especially when you have to project out so many point sources. All right, so just as a check, we ran stuff through with a CMB and SE foregrounds, and as you can see, they reproduce pretty well. So this red point here is what we get from the red simulation, blue point from the blue simulations. There's a lot, you know, SE is non-Gaussian, so there's a lot more cosmic variance than you'd expect just from the CMB. But the pipeline works pretty well. It reproduces the CMB and the expected SC signal. Okay, so sigma 8 equals 1 is actually a pretty high value. What talk from Dick Bond would be incomplete without a 2 sigma map? Clusters come out lower than around, they sort of seem to be around the 0.8-ish area. Weak lensing, everything comes out a little bit lower than 1. So this 2D likelihood map, this is sigma 8 and plotted against tau, 1 sigma and 2 sigma curves with flat and HSTH priors. So if you just average this, you get a best guess value of sigma 8 equals 0.88, but the fact that you're averaging with tau is, as you can see, if tau is high, that pushes sigma 8 high, and I don't really think that tau is that high. So sigma 8, I don't know. Could it be a more exotic foreground? We occasionally have had some other foregrounds. So, anyways, so for a summary, things below L of 2000 are consistent. We see this excess power. It's consistent with simulations of SE if sigma 8 is around 1. We're not claiming that indeed sigma 8 is 1, but the excess is unlikely to be something, you know, some galactic foreground or instrumental or point source signal. So interesting things do a follow up on the excess. It'd be very interesting to hear what Akbar gets, because if it were an SE signal, then it would go away in their SE null channel. Okay, yeah, Max? Quite.
Yeah, but human, because even if you look at the histogram of the pixel temperatures, right, if you have point sources, you expect positive human, you expect MC, you expect the negative human.
Yeah, it's well. It's hard with all the point sources we project out. We project about half the area, so it's a little hard to come up with pixels.
Well,
and we also difference. So point sources are not positive, and SC is not negative.
What I had in mind was the statistical effect using all our clever nature
data, making
into form vision.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, the only thing you can tell is if something is extended, but positive versus negative because of the differencing.
Yeah, we haven't, as of yet, at least, done anything detailed with non-gas standard. It's something we're working on. But I know it's certainly something we're working on. But it is pretty tricky, because of all the different contaminations. But yes, you're certainly right that it's worth looking at. Oh, no, okay, the sky at 30 gigahertz was brighter by 3. The sky at IRAS 100 micron was brighter by factors of thousands.
All right, so I was just trying to clarify that.
Yeah, okay.
There was a paper that maybe connected the primordial.
No, I haven't.
Does your business compare to MAP?
We are about a factor of 3 higher in angular resolution than MAP. MAP goes out to 1,000 or so. So they won't be able to measure this sort of stuff. It's somewhere in the 10 to 20 arc seconds. 20 arc seconds is about as bad as it'll get. Not formally. So what we've done is tested if you smear around the positions or the point sources, and by similar, I think I've moved them around by an arc method, and again, you just don't see any effect. So our pointing RMS is really more like 5 or 10 arc seconds, and so that's just not big enough to introduce things.
How confident are you in your subtraction of the known sources? So one question is, if you didn't subtract sources, if you didn't count for sources at all, how large would the power be there?
Let's see. I don't think I have that plot here. It's fairly large. I mean, if you leave all the sources in there, it's a whopping signal.
Factor 10, factor 100.
I think around 10 or so. Yeah, but about 10. But most of that is coming from just the brightest sources. And so, right. If we get rid of the sources we measure with OVRO and then leave the rest of the sources in there, it's about a factor of 2 or 3 higher before we project out the NVSS sources.
But you're confident that your technique works at that level?
You're not using the data, you're just throwing it away. You're setting the weight to 0 for the modes that have point sources. And so what we've done, again, is we've perturbed the properties of the point sources to see if getting that wrong will let power through, and what you find is that it's very insensitive to fluctuations in the spectral index or the position.
And we've done simulations where we've added sources and then projected them out, and we cover the original
spectrum. It's
can anybody else go back there at high frequency?
We'd love it if they could. I think right now, I don't think there's anybody around. Well, Susie might be able to do it. Are your angular scales large enough?
Yes. Well, 12.5
Okay. Yeah. So Susie would be the best. I mean, Akbar also could do it, but we're too far north for them to see. Okay. Yeah. So I think for now, Susie would be the best. But chopping at 5 arc minutes would be just recovering our smallest beams. So I don't think you could expect features to reproduce necessarily between SUSY and CBI, but the power spectrum might. Oh, the coordinates are up or anything? Oh yeah, the map making is pretty tricky, especially when you zap out the point sources. So it is a little tricky to say this feature is real.
Quick question for the theorist before the break. So this thing, it seems like it's pushing sigma 8 to a not wonderfully comfortable region. So is this a test of a function? is the function failing, or is this a...
If you ask one author at one Webster paper what sigma 8 is, they'll give you very small error bars, right? But even in the last year, we've seen sigma 8 scattering over 0.8 to 1.0. So there's a bigger standard between the papers and within them, which is related, of course, to the
Hubble constant, right?
All this is the landing, all the stuff I was showing yesterday. It doesn't have to be too stressed.
Okay. Well, it's time
to.
I think we're going to hear more on this in a short while. So let's take our break and congregate back here in half an hour.